American military officials are doing damage control again after another incident that could raise the price tag for the American withdrawal from Afghanistan. Today, the Los Angeles Times published gruesome photos taken 2 years ago showing grinning U.S. soldiers posing with the remains of insurgent suicide bombers. The pictures were given to the paper by a soldier from the 82nd Airborne who told the Times that they point to a breakdown of leadership and discipline. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta says an investigation is underway and that the pictures don't represent the values of the vast majority of troops, which of course sounds familiar. In January, a video surfaced on the internet showing Marines urinating on Afghan corpses. In February, the accidental burning of Korans on a U.S. base triggered riots that left more than 24 people dead. And in March, 17 Afghans were killed. An army sergeant has been charged with premeditated murder. And these events come as Afghan President Hamid Karzai is looking for a firmer financial commitment from the U.S. for funds for the cash-strapped Afghan army after the U.S. withdraws combat forces in 2 years. Let's check in with Bing West, retired Marine captain and a former Assistant Secretary of Defense. So, Bing, in your mind, do these pictures raise the price tag of withdrawal?
Yes. But the overall observation I'd make is that any time you go to war and you have over 100,000 people out there, and in this particular battalion they had 35 killed by these improvised explosives, you are going to have individual breakdowns of one degree or another. The big difference today versus any of the other wars is the immediacy with which, because of the digital communications, anything that happens all the way down to a private suddenly is seen all the way around the world. Yeah. It's not that they're performing worse than in the past. If anything, I'd argue they're performing better. But it's a digital age. That's the huge difference.
It's getting around. Well, you and I were talking before we started here, and my dad had little scalloped edge pictures from Guadalcanal, which were pretty horrific. He wasn't smiling in them. But as you say, this has happened over the course of war. Now these pictures get out faster. But you did just say that you think it will be leverage for the Afghan government as they negotiate the cost of ending this war. The U.S. and Afghanistan forming a strategic partnership agreement. U.S. officials say it's just a framework, but President Karzai wants a written commitment that the U.S. will spend at least $2 billion a year on training Afghan forces going forward. U.S. officials say they expect to spend more than that, maybe $4 billion, but it seems like they don't want to put it in writing. Is that because it is going to get hard to get Congress to approve these payments years out from now?
Absolutely. And that's what happened in Vietnam that we don't want to admit to ourselves. Beginning in 1972, we had promised Vietnam something like $2.5 billion a year. By 1975, when South Vietnam fell, we had cut off the aid completely. And so Karzai is very concerned that he has something in writing. However, the President of the United States cannot commit a Congress 3 years from now to what the Congress is going to do. The Congress would never agree to that. So the amount of money is, it's not going to be resolved. The other thing is that President Karzai is gone. His term comes to an end in 2014. So his bargaining leverage is very, very low, which says that the year 2014, 2015, I expect quite a degree of chaos in Afghanistan.
Well, there's that. And then let's look at the now. You were just in Afghanistan, embedded with U.S. Marines. We'll link to your National Review article at herenow.org. Do you think that the U.S. is getting its money's worth from the Afghan military it's helping to train?
From the Afghan army, the answer is yes. From the police, the answer is probably no. The fundamental issue is beyond us. That is, General Allen, who's now in charge over there, has only one mission: get us out and transition to the Afghan army. And the way things are bouncing all over the place in Afghanistan, I think nobody in 2012 can predict what's going to happen in 2015, except for one thing. We're not going to be the ones doing the fighting in 2015. We're coming home.
Just to your assessment, though, of the Afghan army, a U.S. military official had this to say about the Afghan army to Washington Post reporter Greg Jaffe. He said, "We took the best mountain fighters in the world and turned them into a third-rate NATO army." In other words, he didn't have that positive assessment you had of the military.
Well, the only thing I'm saying is, if you look at what General Allen's been trying to do, the number of people he stood up, the number of people he's trained, it's coming along. And they have a natural fighting capability. Will they fight the way we fight when we're not there? Probably not. But it doesn't mean that they won't fight. The interesting thing is, after the Russians pulled out, the Afghan army held its own for a couple more years. And that's basically what Karzai is saying. He's saying, are you going to give us enough money to pay our army after you're gone? And I don't think we can answer that question, because it's a question of how the U.S. Congress looks at it. But we're talking about a very small amount of money. We're talking about the difference between $4 billion and $6 billion.
Imagine that. That's a small amount of money.
I know. What's happened to us when we talk that way, right?
Well, but when should the U.S. be gone? Just this week, Australia's prime minister said she'll start bringing the 1,500 Australian troops home this year. That's a year earlier than expected. Canada, the Netherlands, and France have already pulled their forces out of combat or have sped up withdrawal. You know, something like 70% of Americans have turned against the war in Afghanistan. Should President Obama consider bringing the troops home earlier?
Well, we are. I mean, President Obama this year is bringing home 30,000 troops out of 100,000. What he does in the next year, does he bring 30% home or 40% home? That's a small question versus has he promised he's bringing the vast majority home, and the answer to that is yes. So we're down to a timetable that's pretty much already set in stone.
Well, one last question before we let you go. We saw the attacks in Afghanistan this week. The Taliban claimed credit, but U.S. and Afghan officials blamed the attacks on the Haqqani network, which is based in Pakistan with ties to the Pakistan Secret Service. I mentioned your article in the National Review. We asked another military analyst, Boston University Professor Andrew Basevich, to read it, and he pointed to these sentences that you wrote, that the Pakistani sanctuary is the third vector here. Pakistan supports terrorists in a proxy war in order to control the eventual political outcome in Afghanistan. Conceding a sanctuary to insurgents has historically imperiled any beleaguered government. In other words, you're saying Afghanistan can't afford to concede the sanctuary for the Haqqani network and others to Pakistan. But what can they do? Short of attacking Pakistan, what can they do?
I cannot conceive, if we were having this conversation even a year from now, that we would not have seen a significant strike against Haqqani. I can't predict how it's figured out, but if they don't figure it out, they have a good chance of losing Afghanistan.
Might it involve U.S. drones?
Absolutely. Yeah. Our drone capability with our strikes scares the living daylights out of all the terrorists, and it's one of the reasons that I don't believe you're going to see the terrorists ever again taking over Kabul.
That's Bing West, retired Marine captain. You can read his latest article about the war in Afghanistan at hereandnow.org. Bing, thanks as always.
Thank you, Robin.